Hello and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. This is Mark Williams speaking to you from sunny Cambridgeshire in the UK. My guest this week comes from across the pond. Sandy Enorf is the CEO and founder of Transparency Fuels LLC. Sandy founded Transparency in June 2017, following about 10 years working in bunker trading and broking at the likes of LQM, Integrate and Peninsula. Transparency Fuels is an independent global marine fuels brokerage. Sandy is a 1998 graduate of the US Naval Academy. Before going into a career in bunkering, Sandy served for over 9 years as a US Navy combat helicopter pilot and is a decorated combat veteran for her work during Operation Iraqi Freedom. Sandy is currently serving as the Vice President of the Connecticut Maritime Association and is an active Worcester and IBIA member. So Sandy, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Mark, thanks for having me.
It's always a delight, always a delight. So really love to talk about the view from North America at the moment. And of course, it's November and the Carbon Intensity Index and the EEXI have now gone live. And I was wondering what you're hearing from your market about people's experiences.
So it's interesting how diverse the approach to CII is over here. I did a quick poll of, we've been sort of asking our customers how we can help them with their CII reporting on a daily basis. You know, like as we book their bunker stems, how can we make the process easier for them? And it's very interesting now that we're live with CII and the January deadline is looming, how a lot of our customers who are charterers haven't received any guidance at all from their head owners on what they're going to need to report and how they need to report it, formatting. And then you talk to different customers who say, yeah, we're all set up. We know exactly what system we have to put it in. This is the information. This is how it's going to calculate. So it's really sort of a mixed bag on, you know, how people are forward looking and how some people, I think, just like everything in shipping, are probably going to be more reactionary, be like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing this now. But I think it's, you know, last week, as I know, you know, BIMCO came out with their charter party clause to insert about CII reporting. Owners, I think, love it. Charterers, I think, have a different perspective in the sense that they don't feel protected enough. For example, if you're a Jones Act tanker operator and your ship is operating at $60,000 a day and you're running, you know, basically the same route around the US and the charterer says, or the owner says, hey, you have to slow down. There's nothing, it doesn't help the charterer. It doesn't protect them in any ways on, you know, okay, slow down. So now you have, we're extending the cost or how many days the voyage is. So I think that's going to be something that needs to be worked out as we move into January and probably through 2023. I think you're going to see a lot of iterations of how this is worked out. The exclusions, like I know the weather exclusions haven't been really approved by IMO yet. So I think my personal opinion is with all things IMO 2030, 2050 is that it's all about collaboration. And if you're going to enter into a charter party with an owner, you gotta kind of work together and figure out the best way for both sides. And I'm not sure that just a standard BIMCO clause is going to do it. I think it's going to take some tweaking.
Sure, yeah. I think there's a cultural change that is required, isn't there? Because of the way charter parties are written, I think the relationship between charterers and owners could be quite adversarial, and it has to become more collaborative.
You even see that today with conventional fuels. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we'll have a bunker stem or a delivery will happen and a customer, you know, a charterer will come back and say, the owners have put us on notice. And I'll say, can you send me what the bunker clause of your charter party says? And it's like basically written of the time of wooden ships. There's like very old ISO standards listed as the requirements. And it's always interesting to me that owners and charterers don't pay more attention to those bunker clauses, you know, being it's your number one operating cost. Get in there, edit it, update it, especially as you're moving into all these different types of fuels. You're going to have to pay attention to that chunk of your charter party.
It's going to become much more important, but complying with CII and working out your ship energy efficiency management plan is hard enough without, you know, working one's way through all of the alphabet soup. But we're running our second annual dry cargo decarbonization survey. And listeners, please do go to the ship.energy website and look for that and have your say. It takes about 90 seconds to respond to the 10 questions. And one of the questions asks users if they believe the CII and EX CII are going to work in their current format. And only 27% of respondents so far say they are workable in their current format. And about a third of respondents say they think it needs some amendment. And about 18% of respondents say that it's not working at all. So I think there's quite a lot of disquiet in the industry still about it. Now, the IMO have built in I think it's in June 2024, there's a sort of revision process. So once there's a year's worth of operational data has been fed into the IMO for all of 2023, and then they'll have analyzed that by sort of March 2024, then they've got a couple of months to think about it, and then there's the opportunity to adjust it. But of course, the problem with that is that the rules might change from 2025, so nobody really knows where they stand.
Absolutely. It's like figure it out, and then let's figure it out again, and figure it out again, keep going that way. But, you know, it's interesting when you talk about the timing of that. You know, so one of our charterers had an interesting perspective on what he felt was going to be good about the CII reporting process was that it was going to be much harder for owners, and not that any owners do this, for them to cheat on consumption. Like everything is going to be documented on a daily basis. And when you, even if an owner says, hey, you need to slow down, you're taking the average of CII over the year, right? So let's say you have a voyage that might have a negative CO2 factor or a negative impact on your rating, you have the rest of the time to sort of evaluate, hey, what voyages can we pick up that sort of counteract that? So I think you're definitely going to see change in trading patterns. And then let's say you do end up with a D rating. You have 3 years to correct that. If you get the E, you got 1 year. So you're definitely going to be changing much faster. But I think that 2023 is definitely going to be an exploratory year of how are these things working? Who are the winners? Who are the losers? And how do owners and charterers work more together to optimize the earnings on both sides while keeping, you know, the environment and the caps in place?
Sure. Yeah. Some way to go. Absolutely. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, we've got the whole fuels discussion around it as well. If we're going to decarbonize, we have to get off carbon-based fuels. It's early days, really, to talk about hydrogen-based fuels like liquefied hydrogen or ammonia. But LNG and increasingly methanol have their supporters. Do you have a view on possible demand for alternative fuels? Is it being talked about much amongst the bunker traders and suppliers?
What our view is if you look at the order books, you're getting a lot of LNG dual fuel, methanol dual fuel. You're going to have, I think, a buffet of products. And it was interesting. We had one of our suppliers come and meet with us. They're a big player in the med. They said, we're basically looking at having a whole range of products available. High sulfur fuel oil will pretty much always be a staple, at least until 2030. So just with how many, that's obvious from the perspective of look at how many scrubbers are being installed on ships now. That order book has gone up. So what happens after 2030, I think, is a different game in the short run, but biofuels is definitely something that we get a lot of questions about. That's like of the most interesting piece, I think, for a lot of folks, especially if you have an older ship, you're not really going to invest a lot of money in installing something. You're looking for your drop-in that's going to help you on the CII. What we need, is a more owner or more suppliers to sort of enter the game. And I think it's, especially in the US, it's a tank space restrictions and limitations, and then equipment. Everything, as you know, barges in the US have to be our Jones Act, and that's a very limited fleet right now. And it's very expensive for, you know, the barge operators and owners to build new barges that can meet the demands. When there's no demand, it's hard to invest the money in the tank. It's hard to invest the money in building the barge. So I think you have to look at partnerships. If you're going to be coming to the US and you really have an interest in getting into biofuels, then you should probably be reaching out and helping partnerships so that there's sort of a JV model to bring these things along.
Okay, so again, it's that element of collaboration and cooperation that becomes important. You mentioned about Jones Act, and US policy is an interesting one at the moment because you just had the midterm elections. And the results, I think, suggest that the voters don't really want too much of an extreme to the left or the right. So you've got almost like a hung parliament in the UK. Perhaps the Democrats' climate policies might have survived those midterms. And I was wondering if, therefore, you might expect further refinery closes in the US or, you know, further restrictions on residual fuel availability as the simpler refineries which tend to produce the residual fuels, get shuttered or closed down altogether.
You know, it's not a joke. President Biden tends to make some polarizing comments that if you were big oil, you would probably not be a huge fan of. So I do think the refineries actually, as we go into the winter, are going to keep ticking along, is my sort of view on that. What I think is interesting about the policies, though, is, you know, recently we just passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and there's a huge $3 billion worth of investment that is ready to go into alternative fuels projects and sort of green energy. And what I think, and this isn't isolated in the US, but it's definitely present here. It's, you know, it's a problem in the EU as well, is that governments are wanting everybody to invest in these projects, but they're not providing any sort of tax incentives to spend the money to develop these things. So great, there's $3 billion that the government wants to invest in projects, but, you know, if I'm already in a recession and oil prices are high, now they've come down a little bit this week to much everybody's joy. I think what's interesting is governments are going to have to sort of come up with some incentives for people to actually spend the money and get into the projects. You know, we have some folks that are doing biofuels trials out in California, and the taxes are killers. So what incentive is there for people to increase their bottom line operating cost if, you know, for the sake of what? Good publicity and not have any sort of benefit from the or recognition from government. So I think there's going to have to be greater, whether it's lobbyists, partnerships from oil companies or even smaller companies that are looking and investing in these projects. Get with your politicians, get with the policymakers, either in a local port, and develop incentives for people to invest the money. And the money is there for the projects. You just need to incentivize people.
Yeah. This week I was at a Maritime UK event in London, and Michael Parker, the head of global transport for Citi, was there, and he was talking about the trillions of dollars that are available for green investments that are coming from the big financiers these days. And they're just waiting for the technology to be supported by the government. So for instance, in the UK, renewable road fuels are taxed at the same rate as hydrocarbon road fuels, whereas electric and hybrid vehicles are taxed at much lower rates. So, you know, if only governments can move the dial on that by adjusting the taxation system.
Well, yeah. And then you also, not to get political, but, you know, you look at California, they have some of the most stringent CARB taxation policies on bunker fuels as it is. But there's a big push there for electric vehicles. So they want everybody to buy, you know, the year 2030. I think everybody's supposed to have an electrical vehicle in California. But they just had a big energy tightening where they were like, no, you're not allowed to charge your electric car anymore because we don't have the infrastructure to support it. It's like, okay, work on the messaging a little bit.
Yeah, joined up policy is all we really ask for, isn't it? But, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that commerce is ahead of the governments, you know, even ahead of the IMO, and we just need to get the regulatory certainty so that we can move ahead with the investment.
Fortunately, we are, yeah, commercial business is not driven at the pace of government development. Otherwise, nobody would be anywhere these days.
Quite, and we're not subject to the electoral cycle. So, you know, the short-termism that comes out of the electoral cycle, which of course the Chinese would also say is a benefit of their system, but let's not go into that.
Not enough time.
But yeah. What we do have time for, though, is to plug your own podcast, because I know that you also are a provider of audio delight.
We're working on it, Mark. So Transparency Fuels, we're brokers only based in the US, but we have global footprint. And we were chatting about this before we started recording, but I feel like there's always a hot topic in bunkers, especially it became very prevalent after Russia invaded the Ukraine, how quickly just the moment from when an inquiry hits the market to when a bunker stem is booked has changed in the last 6 months. Like how people do business is really either it's accelerated, and in some cases, people have really spread it out. So much more forward looking or trying to be as much as possible. So I started a podcast. It's called Fueled Thoughts. You can find it on Apple, Spotify. It's 3 to 5 minutes. It's quick. It's easy and it just covers whatever we sort of are hearing in the market or a concern from our customer or a trend or something that's frustrating. I think even when we get into all these new fuels, how people handle claims is a big issue always. So we try to address best practices in bunkers. Anyways, it's easy. It's not a real time commitment.
No, 3 to 5 minutes sounds good to me. One more question for you. I know time is limited for everybody, but in the space that we have, your company is called Transparency. And transparency is a big element of the G in ESG these days. And shipping, of course, is not really known for its transparency. You know, it is literally offshore because things are afloat in the oceans. But there's a lot of offshore incorporation, flags of convenience and so on. And increasingly, the financiers are starting to say, if you want action on the EBIT, if you want the money to finance the capital expenditure to improve your emissions performance, then you're going to have to improve your performance on the S and the G as well, because those are the TCFD or whatever other rules framework the financiers are supplying. Do you think that transparency is something that sits comfortably with marine fuels and their customers, or are we going to have to change the culture again?
Well, I love that it's always a topic, because whenever I'm at a conference and somebody says the word transparency, which is regular, I feel like it's free marketing. So I appreciate that. But I think there is a big push as we go into these new fuels to add some more standardization, make things more clear. And I think as things become more complex, both sides of the equation are going to need a lot more transparency when it comes to who's purchasing what, are their requirements, how is it being delivered, what's the source of the cargo. And there's just not going to be, I think complexity lends itself to transparency in a lot of ways if you're professional in the space, because you're going to have people that you need to report to, whether it's shareholders, owners, banks, investors. They're going to want to make sure that their money is being spent in the right place. So I think there's opportunity more than ever before, and to go back to the collaboration where people really are sharing information more than they ever have. And that's positive.
Well, Sandra, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been great to have you on the show, and encourage everyone to listen to your own podcast available at the Transparency website. And as you say, on all your favorite podcasting platforms like Apple and Spotify.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for taking the time. And thank you to everyone out there in listener land. And join us again soon for another exciting edition of the Ship Energy Podcast. This is Mark Williams from Cambridge signing off. Bye for now.